The Old Testament reading is taken from the book of Exodus, chapter 28, reading from verses 1 to 12. And that can be found on the Pew Bibles, page 86. That's Exodus, book of Exodus, chapter 28, beginning to read at verse 1. The priestly garments. Have Aaron, your brother, brought to you from among the Israelites, with his son Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar, so that they may serve me as priests. Make sacred garments for your brother Aaron, to give him dignity and honor. Tell all the skilled men to whom I have given wisdom in such matters that they are to make garments for Aaron for his consecration, so that he may serve me as a priest. These are the garments they are to make: a breastpiece, an ephod, a robe, a woven tunic, a turban, and a sash. They are to make these sacred garments for your brother Aaron and his sons, so that they may serve me as priests. Make them use gold and blue, purple and scarlet yarn, and fine linen. Make the ephod of gold and of blue, purple and scarlet yarn, and of finely twisted linen, the work of a skilled craftsman. It is to have two shoulder pieces attached to two of its corners so that it can be fastened. Its skillfully woven waistband is to be like it, of one piece with the ephod and made with gold and with blue, purple and scarlet yarn and with finely twisted linen. Take two onyx stones and engrave on them the names of the sons of Israel in the order of their birth. Six names on one stone, and the remaining six on the other. Engrave the names of the son of Israel on the two stones the way a gem cutter engraves a seal. Then mount the stones in gold filigree settings and fasten them on the shoulder pieces of the ephod as memorial stones for the sons of Israel. Aaron is to bear the names on his shoulders as a memorial before the Lord.
The New Testament reading is taken from page 1138, and that's Hebrews 4, verse 14 to 16. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has ascended into heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to feel sympathy for our weaknesses. But we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. This is the word of the Lord.
Last week, we realized, as we began a series looking at the tabernacle, that God is a big fan of the theater. He commanded Moses and the Israelites to build the tabernacle. Did you get that last week, if you were here? As a kind of traveling theater. It was his idea to be a stage on which to play out the drama of salvation, a way of modeling the true relationship between God and man. You see, God is so desperate for us to know him, to truly know him, he'll go to any lengths. He'll even put on a play, if only to make plain to us that there is this way to have relationship with him. And I said to you that I was building a model tabernacle. Well, here's the box, and I have actually got the kit out of the box, and I managed to do the first few bits. So we do have a kind of perimeter fence here showing the courtyard within, and I've put out the first few items of furniture that I told us about last week. So do come and have a look. There's a bit more work to do on that yet, but hopefully we'll get there in the end. So the Tabernacle Theatre tells us so much about the world we live in and how human beings can truly relate to God. And so we thought about this this tabernacle as a kind of stage or a set in which, it represents heaven and earth, right? Heaven and earth. And we saw that initially it was just one room. That covered tent there was just one room, heaven and earth, intended for each other, to be together from beginning of time to the end of time. And then we looked at four of the props, didn't we? We looked at four props found on stage. We saw that they were all pieces of furniture within the tabernacle. Maybe you've got pieces of furniture at home that are special to you. They might have a particular meaning to you. And all this furniture had a particular meaning attached to it. The first three pieces of furniture stood for the three persons of the Godhead. The ark there behind the curtain symbolized the Father on his throne, surrounded by angels. The table of the presence, just there, table of bread, represented Jesus, the visible presence of God who dwells among the people and sustains them in every way. And then we saw the lampstand, who illuminates all things, throwing light on the table of the presence, spoke of the Holy Spirit. He illuminates the things of God and shows us Jesus as he really is. But there was a fourth piece of furniture, the altar of incense. And that represents the people of God. And it was placed slap bang in the middle. We saw that, didn't we? Showing God's purpose to include us within the life of the Trinity, to treat us as insiders, members with full rights to speak up and be part of that life. So that was last week. That was last week. And this week, we meet the actors. We meet the actors. We discover what role they play and what that role means. So let's introduce them. You might have heard it in the reading. It was Exodus 28, verse 1. Let Aaron, your brother, be brought to you from among the Israelites with his sons, Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar, so that they may serve me as priests. So these actors are all part of one family. It was one man, Aaron, and his sons, chosen to be priests. Now, I wonder what the word... Oh, did I miss one there? Oh, I thought I had another one in between. Maybe I don't. I wonder what the word priest means to you. What sort of role do you think a priest performs? What kind of role is it that Aaron and his sons are performing? Well, to understand this role that they're playing as priests, we have to remember something that we looked at briefly last week. And that is the curtain, this curtain. After the tabernacle, representing heaven and earth, had been set up, a curtain was introduced about two-thirds of the way down. What does the curtain mean or represent? Well, on the curtain were cherubim, angelic creatures, guardian angels. You might be thinking to yourself, I've heard of cherubim in the Bible. Where have I heard of them before? And actually, it's back in Genesis 3:24. It's not long after the creation of the heavens and the earth. It's just after Adam and Eve have disobeyed the Lord and sinned. And these cherubim are brought in to enforce a separation. They're stationed on the border of heaven and earth, charged with keeping sinful men and women out of the Father's presence. Because sin has terrible consequences. It separates God and man. And there's no easy way back to God. And that's why cherubim were woven onto the curtain that set up two-thirds of the way down the tabernacle, as a vivid reminder on stage of the situation between God and man, that we're cut off by sin. We're separated from God, and there's no easy way back. So your curtains at home, they keep out the light, they keep out the general public from peering in. This curtain kept out sinners. And the question posed by the curtain is, how can our separation from God be overcome? How can sinful people have access to God? How can we know his life and blessing in spite of the curtain that has been drawn? And that's the context onto which our actors step on stage. And it's really a two-part answer. There's a two-part answer. Part one. This separation can be overcome through the mediation of a perfect high priest. Part two can be overcome through the offering of a perfect sacrifice. So that's what these actors are telling us. They're telling us who can overcome the barrier that separates us from the life of God. It's a priest, a perfect high priest. Okay, so what is a priest? When you think of a priest, I don't know what comes to mind. There are all kinds of things that you might think of. You might think of celibacy in the Roman Catholic Church. You might think of someone who reads the last rites. You might even think of scandals and abuses. We can't get away from the things we hear in the news. But really, a priest is just a middleman. A priest is a mediator, a go-between, someone who bridges the gap. In this case, the gap is our gap with God. And a priest acts for both parties equally, for God and for the people. He reaches out to the people on God's behalf, and he reaches out to God on behalf of the people. He negotiates a way between the parties where no other way is possible. And in the Old Testament, his role is massive. He's needed for all kinds of things: to administer justice, to reach decisions, to diagnose sickness, to verify healing, to present acceptable sacrifices, to present the prayers of the people. For all these things, and probably lots more, God required a priest to be involved. And that in itself is a sobering lesson for us to learn. God, are you saying I need a middleman for every aspect of my relationship with you? Are you saying we can't have any dealings whatsoever without a priest? See, we've got this assumption, haven't we, I guess, that we can pass through that curtain by ourselves, that we can approach God safely in our own person, and that God will deal with us directly. We think we're entitled to it by our sheer hard work, by our own inner goodness, because we've been to church, because we've paid our taxes, or done a fun run. But the lesson God's teaching us here is there's no way we can approach God directly ourselves. We need a go-between, a great high priest for everything. Now, we're going to spend a lot of time this morning thinking about costume, okay? That's because one verse in chapter 28 here is spent talking about Aaron and his sons. The next 39 are spent on the costumes that they're to wear. Now, costumes are powerful, aren't they? They're powerful in creating a vivid impression of someone else. That's why actors wear them, to get into character, to convince the audience that they are someone else. And they need costume because they aren't the person that they are playing. With the help of costume, though, they can become that character. So Claire Foy, I don't know if you have you seen The Crown, the series on Netflix? Claire Foy is not the Queen. But she was able to play the part of the Queen by dressing up like a young Queen Elizabeth II. And that's really what Aaron and his sons are doing here in chapter 28. They're ordinary men chosen to play the part of God's high priest, dressing up in costume to play it convincingly. They were no more mediators between God and man than Claire Foy is Queen Elizabeth II. The Bible tells us there is only one high priest and mediator between God and man, and that is Jesus. But once Aaron and his sons got dressed up, they were able to play the role. The role of Jesus. Oh, this is what one man says. The high priest, arrayed in his official garments, was a striking and instructive type of Jesus, our great high priest. So, what we're going to do is go into the costume room and learn about Jesus together, our great high priest, through the costume that is worn by the priests, okay? So what was the costume and what was it telling us about Jesus? So here's a picture of what the great high priest wore. And the list was given in verse 4, wasn't it? Here are the garments that were to be made: a breastpiece, an ephod, a robe, a woven tunic, a turban, and a sash. And we're not going to talk about all of them, but we'll mention a few, okay? First, let's talk about the tunic of fine linen. It was a kind of white robe. You can see the sleeves there, the white sleeves, and just at the bottom over his feet, you can see this white robe, white for purity. The human character is soiled in so many ways by sin. But the character of Jesus, the high priest, is flawless. And the purity we lack, he has. You look at his life when you read the Gospels, and it's wonderful. It's perfect. He's the perfect high priest. But most of his clothes aren't white. Let's talk about the bright colours of the ephod and the breastpiece. Now, I've recently bought a few clothes, new clothes, in Sainsbury's 25% off sale, and they're two range. Don't know if anyone else took advantage of that offer. But I'm no fashion expert, so I feel like a bit of a fraud trying to go through these clothes. But what I found out is that an ephod is kind of an apron that was connected to the breast piece. You'll see in verse 5 that there are specific instructions to use gold and blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and fine linen. And in verse 6, when the ephod is described, it's to be made of gold and of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and of fine twisted linen, the work of skilled hands. And we realize how skilled these people must have been when we come to discover how they were made. I've got chapter 39, verse 3. They hewed out thin sheets of gold and cut strands of this thinly hammered out gold to be worked into the blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and fine linen. Now, one writer from Northern Ireland is particularly impressed by this. This is what he says. To my knowledge, there is not a linen firm in Ulster today that is weaving a metal and a material. Although it is true that at one time this was done in our country. We have here a metal, gold, and a linen material being brought together. Now, we might be impressed like Mr. Mullen. About the level of craftsmanship possible 1,000 years BC. But that's not really the point. The point is what these materials symbolize and what they're telling us about our high priest. Let's take them separately first. First, there's the gold, hammered into thin sheets, but real pure gold. Last week we saw that the furniture in the tabernacle was covered with pure gold. And each item represented one of the members of the Godhead. So gold really indicates the divinity of Jesus, the great high priest. When we go to Jesus, we are not dealing simply with a man. Here is God. Never forget that. But the ephod and breastpiece contain something else. This blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and fine linen. Where have we heard that mentioned before? It was last week when the tabernacle was made. Chapter 26, verse 1. It was to be made of finely twisted linen and blue, purple, and scarlet yarn. Now, the tabernacle represented the physical creation, didn't it? The stuff that we live in, stuff that we are, stuff of creation. And the fact that the high priest's garments are made of the same finely twisted linen and blue, purple, and scarlet yarn is telling us he's now fully part of us. He's been woven in to the fabric of our nature. What does a baby look like the moment it's born? Yeah, you can see its skin color. But there's a lot of blue, purple, and scarlet, isn't there? Jesus shared in those blues, purples, and scarlets when he was born of the Virgin Mary. And these two were woven together, divinity in the gold and humanity in the blue, purple, and scarlet yarn. Where is divinity now found? Dwelling among us, woven into humanity. He's the one in whom God and humanity can see themselves and find each other. And that is so important. Oh, That's not going to work. That's not going to work. I'll have to read it because it's not come up right. In the Old Testament book of Job, it reminds us what the true qualifications are for a priest. In chapter 9, Job is struggling to think how he and God could possibly meet and get along. And he says in chapter 9, verse 33 to 34, "If only there were someone to arbitrate between us, to lay a hand on us both, someone to remove God's rod from me, so that his terror would frighten me no more." So a priest needs to relate to both parties. And here in these garments, we see that Jesus is that one who's acceptable to both parties, the one in whom we can meet with God and God can meet with us. Now there's time for just, we're pushing time, but there's time for just two more interesting things. The turban or the mitre, which he wore on his head. And it was white. It's that purity again. But its distinctive feature was a small gold plate. You can barely make it out. Small gold plate engraved with the words, "Holy to the Lord," which reminds us of Jesus' single-minded devotion. It was always on his mind that he was serving the Father's will. He won't deviate from it, not even when Satan comes to tempt him. But what was his Father's will? Now we have to look at the stones. Did you hear the stones mentioned? Because besides these clothes, there were 14 stones. Two, you can see, sat on his shoulders. You can just see one of them there pointed to, an onyx stone placed upon the shoulder clasps. So two sat on the shoulders of the ephod, and 12 went in the breast piece. Right in the middle, you can see some larger coloured dots there. And these tell us his Father's will, that he should carry us, his people, and bear us on his strong shoulders, and that he should love us and hold us dear to his heart. I don't know if any of you carry a photograph of a loved one in your pocket. Well, these stones are a bit like that. The two stones on the shoulders of the ephod were engraved with the names of the 12 tribes of Israel, 6 on each stone. 25 verse 6 says, "Take 2 onyx stones and engrave on them the names of the sons of Israel in the order of their birth. 6 names on one stone, the remaining 6 on the other." And then verse 12, "Fasten them on the shoulder pieces of the ephod as memorial stones for the sons of Israel. Aaron is to bear the names on his shoulders as a memorial before the Lord." Now, every Israelite belonged to a tribe. So these stones represented every Israelite, all God's people. Now, some think these stones were placed on his shoulders because that is how Jesus saves us. Luke chapter 15 talks about the lost sheep and how Jesus, the good shepherd, goes and takes us on his shoulders and picks us up and carries us safely. It's a reminder to our high priest himself. The people of God are your responsibility. You carry them. Their fate and their fortunes depend on you. But chiefly these stones were a memorial before the Lord. The Lord could not see the great high priest without also seeing the people he represents. Maybe sometimes God, do you ever think, maybe God would sometimes prefer a quiet word with Jesus and just, you know, keep us out of it. But Jesus says, "Hang on, look, they're here with me all the time." So whenever the Father sees Jesus, our high priest, he sees all of us who Jesus has picked up and carries on his shoulders. And those shoulders are strong for our sake. If you are a child of God, ponder the precious truth that the great high priest bears you on his shoulders. And that however many and weighty your various interests may be, his strength can never fail. For he is an almighty friend. No load is too heavy for him to bear. But he doesn't just have responsibility for us. And this is what we're going to really end with. He doesn't just have responsibility for us. He actually loves us. He loves us. There were 12 more stones mounted in the breast piece. And on each of those stones would go the names of a tribe of Israel. So the whole people of God again were represented. And where did they sit? Well, this was really important. It was so important, in fact, that measures were taken, you can read about it, to make sure that the breastpiece and the stones could not be moved out of place. They had to stay in place. And the place was over the, over the high priest's heart. So verse 29 says, do you want to look at verse 29? There you go, verse 29. Whenever Aaron enters the holy place, he will bear the names of the sons of Israel over his heart, on the breastpiece of decision, as a continuing memorial before the Lord. And the next two verses mention his heart, on his heart, over his heart. And the point is clear. Every member of the church was to be close to his heart, on his heart. It reminded the great high priest that he was not only to care for the people, as the stones taught him, he was to have a place in his heart for all the people of God. Poor Aaron and his sons must have been totally overwhelmed. How can I have a place in my heart for all these people? There were millions of Israelites. They couldn't even know people's names. But the true high priest, the perfect high priest, has a great heart, deep and wide and high, abounding in love for all his people. And that heart feels for us and goes out to us. What a thought if you're a Christian. You're on his heart today. He loves you so much that he's carved your name into his heart. And there's room for more. His heart is big. His heart has space for you too, if you're not already there. Just ask him, Jesus, write my name on your heart, and he'll do it. Today, we quickly forget the love that he has for us. We doubt it, don't we? Maybe that's why the stones were visible. God could have said the stones should be over the high priest's heart, but covered with another layer of clothing. But they were right there on the top, visible to everyone. Why? Isn't it to assure us of how much we mean to him? Because we quickly forget. We start to think, he's indifferent towards me. He's tired of me. Perhaps he can't be bothered with me. No way. No matter how badly we've fallen, no matter how cold we've become, his affections never change. We're still there, on his heart, as much today as the very first day. So this is what Jesus, our high priest, is like. The costume tells us he's dedicated to God, holy to the Lord. He's devoted to us, carrying us on his shoulders, cherishing us in his heart. But why does God tell us all this? Why does God tell us all this about him? To give us confidence in him. Confidence. Confidence in our great high priest. And so we'll use him. Confidence in him so that we will use him. The people of Israel had to go to the priests for everything. Go tell him their problems, their sickness, their shortcomings, their sins, to share their joys and celebrations, to teach them. And we need Jesus like that. We need him for everything. So let's get used to using him, going to him, our great go-between. He's going to bring us to God and God to us. Why wouldn't we use him? He's perfect in every way, and we're always on his heart. We're going to express that in just a moment when we pray, and we're going to pray all our prayers in Jesus' name, through our great high priest, Jesus Christ. But let's finish with these words written by John Newton, the slave trader. It's a hymn. See Aaron, God's anointed priest, within the veil appear, in robes of mystic meaning dressed, presenting Israel's prayer. Through him the eye of faith descries the greater, a greater priest than he. Thus Jesus pleads above the skies for you, my friends, and me. He bears the names of all his saints, deep in his heart engraved, attentive to the state and wants of all his love has saved. In him my weary soul has rest. Though I am weak and vile, I read my name upon his breast and see the Father smile.